Hi, everyone, and welcome to the Tulsa World Opinion Podcast. I'm Jenny Graham, the editorials editor at the Tulsa World, and I am joined today with Mara Gooten. I said that correct, right?
You sure did.
Great. She is the president and CEO of the Child Abuse Network, and it is the hardest job. I think child abuse workers in general, hardest job there is to do. This is honestly God's work. It's difficult, but if you could, you take a couple of just a minute to explain what the Child Abuse Network is for people who don't know what that is.
Sure, and thank you for saying that. It is difficult work, but I know for our team, it's very rewarding, and being able to help in such a tangible way is so important to them. But one of the important pieces of our work is focusing on the trauma and the impact it can have in taking care of our teens. So thank you for recognizing that. So the Child Abuse Network is a multidisciplinary team approach to investigating child abuse. In a community such as ours, we're very lucky that we have this kind of public-private partnership of law enforcement, medical, the Department of Human Service, even, you know, federal, state, local prosecutors and tribal partners all throughout the community who come together under one roof to serve the child in the family there, rather than having kids and, you know, really distraught family members go all over town to get the services they need. You know, child abuse is never the child's fault. And so we want to make things easy and reduce the trauma for these families that need to interface with us for these services in a scary time.
So you're basically bringing all these people together, and that includes the child abuse pediatricians. I don't think people realize that there are pediatricians in our community that only deal with child abuse.
Right. They're a crown jewel.
And yeah, the DHS workers and the law enforcement workers all in one place. And you kind of bring all them together, correct?
Right. And, you know, okay, we might get information on our team that the police don't have, right, or the police might not have information that the Department of Human Services doesn't have. Excuse me, I've got, you know, McGruff the crime dog out here barking in my background. He's a fan of collaboration. So having us all work together really means that we can share that information more readily and make a more complete and thorough investigation.
Well, you have written an op-ed for This Weekend that everyone needs to read. I think it's one of the most interesting op-eds I've read in a while. And the reason is you, without getting into the details of the case, you refer to, you know, when you were a teenager, there was a popular coach and teacher who was alleged to have committed sexual assault on young people. And you sort of talk about what you knew then and what you know now, that there was a school walkout, that everyone was supporting the teacher, and that later that teacher was convicted of child abuse and sexual assault. So I think it's interesting that you in the op-ed say, I was wrong. I know. And so, you know, this is decades ago. So, but it has to have been a very difficult journey, because to realize that we as people can be wrong and to have that kind of hindsight. I'm just curious, when you are now a child abuse, you know, advocate, and this was a situation of child abuse, how difficult was that journey for you? How much did it weigh on you? And just how did you work through that?
Oh boy, we don't have time for all that. But
I know it's a heavy question, but I think that it's an important lesson to learn.
I grew up in, you know, an Irish Catholic immigrant family with a pretty strong moral compass and pretty strong feelings of right and wrong. And I think the biggest part of the journey for me has been accepting that there are people that we love in our lives and care about and respect and admire who make mistakes or who do really bad things at times. And neither one of those things happens independent of the other all the time. I mean, there are shades of gray here. And so to know that someone that you admired or looked up to, or someone who you know, who you put on a pedestal could do something so atrocious, it's hard for people to kind of consolidate that inside themselves. And I think this path of understanding that It's not always black and white, that sometimes people that we look up to do bad things, and recognizing that really the people who are hurt the most in this obviously are the people who suffered. And that we added an extra layer onto that when we didn't speak up immediately and say we were wrong. And I've lived with that. And I think a lot of my classmates have for a long time. And it's time to stand up and to say we were wrong and we believe you and we're so sorry.
And I think that's important. I mean, it's important for child abuse, but it's important for a lot of lessons, that it's okay to mature, learn, and change your perspective on things. But I would imagine with child abuse, with what you see every day, this comes up a little bit more, that because so much of child abuse is the perpetrator is someone known, someone they know. Do you see that a lot? Is this sort of a challenge with what you do in dealing with, you know, that gray and right and wrong? And
yeah, absolutely. I mean, a lot of us grew up in a time and age where what we thought of child abuse or sexual assault or even domestic violence is not what we see in the real world. You know, I thought somebody jumping out of the bushes in Central Park was a sexual assault. And I know now so much more about, you know, date rape and coercion and, you know, talking about all of those things is pretty mainstream now. And the same is true with like child abuse. You know, we had kind of preconceived notions about what that was, but it's not. It can be anything. And part of why people are, and I use this term loosely, but successful as predators is because they're very good at that grooming part. They're very good about not just grooming the child, because kids have parents and we're the gateway. And so making sure that you're vigilant as a parent is so important. And never worrying about questioning. None of us questioned whether this person that we looked up to and admired, who had helped so many of our friends and peers as a counselor and a coach, never did any of us question that, because we knew in our bones that couldn't be true. And what we see sometimes with predators is that they'll create that same sort of cloud around themselves so that people just know it couldn't be true. And I guess my point is just question. It's okay to question. You're doing this for your kids or people you love.
You brought up a term, grooming, and you bring this up in the op-ed. And I wanted to get in that a little bit, because I've heard that term being used in ways that I find troublesome. For example, I've had people recently tell me that libraries and schools are grooming children to be sexual assault victims based on certain books, which is not true. But it waters down the meaning of grooming from what it actually is. Can you just explain for a moment, what is grooming by the terms of the sexual assault world, and who statistically is likely to do that? Who are the typical perpetrators who are grooming children?
Right. So I guess the first thing I'd say is grooming is an action that, you know, has to be kind of perpetuated by, it can't be done by a book. It's a human that's acting in a certain way, utilizing certain behaviors to create a veil of safety or to reduce threat. It happens slowly and over time, depending on how well it's going. Again, use tongue in cheek there, but it can go at a different rate of speed. But it's, you know, kind of stalking predatory behavior. It's pushing boundaries. So we talk with kids a lot about touches that are okay with them and touches that aren't okay with them. Some kids are okay with a high five. Some kids are fine with a hug. But setting boundaries early on, these are things that we, you know, have to kind of help our kids learn. It's like, if you don't want to hug, you don't have to be a hugger. I think COVID taught us all that. But helping kids understand that. And that if someone pushes your boundary, you say, nope, I'm not a hugger. I'm fine with a high five though. So people, when they kind of start to push those boundaries, and if they can push it a little bit, then they'll push a little bit more. I mean, it's a slow progression. But the grooming behavior it doesn't just happen with the children. It happens with the parents as well. Parents, single parents are at an increased likelihood for these things to happen. And I think that could make sense to any of us who's been a single parent. You know, you're strapped for time and energy and cash. And, you know, maybe you work at night and you need somebody who's able to keep your children overnight. I mean, do you quit your job to keep your kids safe? There's just a lot of variables out there that might make you more susceptible to engaging in these sort of friendships, relationships, trusting co-parent type relationships where you need to be vulnerable, you need support, but then someone's maybe using you. So just always questioning is so important.
It's clear that we've learned more as a society about child abuse and neglect. And I think we are still always learning about, you know, why this happens. But looking back on your time, you know, decades ago with that walkout, do you think we've learned enough about it? Sorry about that. Do you think that would happen today? Do you think that, you know, if when allegations surface over a community leader, a popular person, do you think we would have a similar sort of, you know, split in a community over something like that?
You know, anything's possible. We have learned a lot. We know a lot more. There's a lot more research and science out there behind all of this. It's to what degree does any of us integrate that in a way that's useful and meaningful in our lives? I can say for me personally, my children attend the same school. It was a wonderful experience for me and it is for them. I very much believe in the safeguards and the operations and systems in place, not just in that school, but in so many others. I mean, we engage with these school police departments and authorities all the time in our work. And I think everyone's doing what they can to keep children safe. I think where we have to remain vigilant as the primary caretakers and loved ones, and not just as parents, but, you know, it takes a village, wah, wah. It does. We all have to look out for our kids and our loved ones.
So kind of shifting a little bit, looking at Oklahoma's child abuse and neglect, you know, the statistics, right. Are we getting better? Are there trends up or down either way?
Oh, that was a big sigh. You probably heard. we're not. We're learning more. I think we're getting more open to all of the research and the data that we have. I think those of us who have the information are getting a little bit louder. This is my first op-ed, really. So, I mean, I'm feeling more open to being vulnerable and talking about these things and questioning. I think we can do a better job implementing this. I'm starting to see shifts and changes at the state level that make me hopeful. I'm grateful for our First Lady, Sarah Stitt, who's been so vigilant in bringing attention to childhood trauma and the impact over the lifespan. We've got prisons all over the state full of people who are abused as children, and we failed those people. And not that they aren't paying the price for their crimes, but I'm dealing with kids today that I don't want to see in the prison systems. And if we don't do something now for these kids who are victims today, they very well could become perpetrators down the line. So what can we do? We know what we can do, but we have to get people to change their votes, their hearts, their minds, and direct dollars towards more mental health treatment, better supports for families and single parents, better options for daycare and housing. I mean, if we could get poverty under control in this state, we'd be number one. We would be number one, baby.
There are so many things that poverty underlines. Teen births. Domestic violence. And teen births is part of what you deal with probably because of, you know, one of the things that.
You do see some,
Yeah. I mean, you know, teens are not mature. And when they give birth, you know, right. Parenting skills are an issue. You know, right. One of the things that I just needed to throw out there is in covering a lot of the statistics in child abuse through the years, and I've been doing it for decades myself, showing my age. But every time there was a rise, every time there was an increase, one of the first things someone would say to me is, well, people are reporting it more. Well, they're reporting it more. I go, well, that does, I mean, I've been hearing that so often. I'm like, I don't, and of course you can't prove or disprove whether reporting
right.
down. I said, well, it's been the same number of reporting for years. So,
yeah.
I mean, do you buy into that there is something about years that people report more, people don't? Because at this point, I do not. So if someone wants to convince me otherwise, I'm all ears.
I think the disturbing part of that, honestly, is that if they're reporting it more, that's okay. That's fine. Right. But what we're still measuring is abuse. And it doesn't mean that, oh, those are just fake numbers. Like, those are real people. Every single one of those is a person, is a child. So it really is happening. Whether or not it's being reported more is irrelevant. We know that these cases are happening. We know that we need to direct more money towards it. We know that we need to help these kids so that they don't end up in prison down the pike or harming children, because they don't want to do that, you know?
Right. And I always kind of thought it was a way that they were, people who were saying this to me, watering down the trend of up. They did not
yeah.
like it looked bad that it was going up. I said, well, that doesn't mean it didn't happen. And
yeah.
maybe if it was underreported before, perhaps, you know, that was me playing.
Yeah. I think it's so. A way of minimizing it, honestly, because it hurts to hear that. I mean, gosh, I get up and go to work and deal with like a state that we can't seem to get control of this. Like,
right.
how depressing. it feels like you're just spinning your wheels. But I think as we learn more about it and we start to report more, that's a good sign to me that our community is listening and we're looking out for each other.
So how do we compare nationally? That's always been somewhat of a challenge for me, just trying to find apples to apples comparisons. Is there any sense of how we compare nationally?
There is, and it's kind of hard. I mean, it is kind of an apple and oranges thing, but what I guess the trends that I see in Oklahoma are that we continue to rank kind of poor in a lot of areas that are precursors for abuse and neglect. So lower socioeconomics, lower education, higher poverty. So even though you might say, oh, well, it doesn't mean that poor people abuse their children. That's absolutely 100% true. But we know that we see a lot of these little variables that are omnipresent in Oklahoma that don't get better. And then we see our child abuse rates continue to increase or at least stay at a very high level. So there's some correlation that's happening there that we're working hard as not just as our organization, but all of our community partners as well, to try to move the needle on that, because that's, I think, kind of ground zero for making a shift. If you're in a stable home environment, you have a roof over your head, you have food in your tummy, you have a little money in your pocket, you've got gas in your car, you have a job, those all create a safer environment, a safer home life, and a better place to raise children.
And I was going to correct you real quick. I think you misspoke. You said people in poverty are not all abusing their children.
No.
Not true.
No, it is definitely not true. Yeah, it does not mean, like poverty does not equal child abuse. And I think sometimes people want to jump to that, like, oh, you're saying this is, and no.
I just want to be clear that you're saying it's not true. But, you know, in talking about all those stats, I was thinking of this when I covered domestic violence. I was writing a little bit about domestic violence earlier, and there's very similar types of trauma. You know, child abuse and domestic violence sort of go hand in hand in a way. And we have these record numbers of domestic violence incidents coming out. And, you know, at the time I was wondering, you know, is there something unique about Oklahoma that, I mean, and I'm defeatist here. Are we just more violent? What makes us have such high numbers of child abuse, neglect, domestic violence? I mean, does it all go back to poverty? Is there something else in our culture that is stopping us from really addressing these violent and traumatic situations?
I think, you know, when I got into this field, it was because I was young, I was in my early 20s, and I thought I could never imagine a child having to go back to a home where they had been hurt. And so it came from that very like right and wrong. And the longer I'm in this field, the more I realize it's complicated. It's really complicated. And I have shifted really pretty hard from that very black and white, right and wrong thing. And one of the things that sticks with me the most in this work in Oklahoma is just the sheer level of historical trauma that the people in this state have. And specifically in this region, in the Muscogee Nation, where I am very grateful and proud to live here in the Tulsa community, just about 10 miles from the largest race massacre in U.S. history, we are soaking in historical trauma. Generations of people in this community have been impacted. And if you don't believe that, that's okay. I mean, it's all there for us to read and see. But when you consider that people are impacted by that and continue to be impacted with each generation, if we don't talk about it, if we don't learn about it, if we don't make peace with it, then we're going to continue to ram our head against that same wall over and over again. We've got to help each other get through this to be better.
Yeah, I've said that sometimes after doing so many of these stories, I feel like I'm just beating my head against the wall. But, you know, it is frustrating because I think that there are some things that can be done. And you were just down at the legislature last week, I think, talking mm-hmm. to lawmakers yeah. about this issue.
Yeah.
What are some things that you're looking at things that can be done? You've mentioned a little bit that we need to really start investing in certain areas, programs. I mean, can you just take a minute to talk about some things off the top of your head that Oklahomans could implement right now that would be helpful?
Sure. I mean, I guess the longer I'm around, the longer I realize like, wow, it takes a whole lot of ants to carry whatever we're trying to carry up the hill. And so I think just joining the fight is big. I think talking about it, you know, it's kind of like, you don't want to talk about child abuse. Like, who wants to talk about child abuse? It's almost like something we're not proud of or something we're ashamed of. And I think, you know, we shouldn't be happy about it, but we should also recognize it and own that it's there. So just talking about it. I mean, sharing things on social media. We do a huge campaign through CAN. I'm just so grateful for our media team because they put together the greatest little like tips and tricks that, you know, people are just scrolling social media and they'll pick up little things about like other ways to tell your child you love them without, you know, saying I love you. So just sharing things like that or implementing those, just little changes are so important. Of course, time and money are always so valuable in helping to propel the mission. And then talking to your legislators, we hear that a lot, but these are people that live and work among us that are amazing and want to hear what we want in the state. We've got some great new freshmen in there too, and a lot of just really excited, hardworking people who want the same things we want, to have a better state, better outcomes for our kids, and a brighter future.
So for Oklahomans who don't work in this world, what are some of the important things you would say to them? What are the myths or the stats or anything that you think Oklahomans need to know about child abuse and neglect right now?
So I think that child abuse isn't always about good and bad. There's a lot of generational poverty and generational poor parenting practices. And, you know, we all say there's not a book for this. So if you maybe learned poor parenting practices, the likelihood that you might utilize those with your own children could also happen. I mean, the more I learn, the less I'm like, oh, well, I was spanked. I think I spanked my older kids, but I've never spanked my younger son. Like, you know, I've just changed my position on that the more I've learned. But it's not about right or wrong. It's oftentimes it's like helping people learn, helping people do better. And so if we can kind of learn those things now, it's going to make things so much easier.
Parenting is hard. I mean, even the best parents, I don't think, do any of us know what we're doing? I mean, we're just...
No, we're all on Facebook asking everyone else, what are you doing?
So when I hear lawmakers say parents are always right, I'm like, sometimes we are not. Sometimes we need someone to say, hey, there's a better way or a place to go. And for parents who are truly, and we all know them, we're all in schools, for parents who are truly having trouble, that's where we have to intervene with and help others, because I see laws being based on these optimum family situations and not realizing that not all kids are coming from these optimum family situations.
Right.
To always be thinking about them. Like we can't leave them out because they need to be included. So
it's so true.
Yes. Parenting's hard.
It's so hard. And we're and none of us is perfect at it. I mean, I wish we were, but it's like we all make mistakes. And I think it's great for kids to know, you know, moms make mistakes, dads make mistakes, even your moms and dads.
But so you're important. Right about that village thing. And I know it's cliche, but so many times that prevents a bad situation from getting worse.
Right.
And
don't be afraid to question your village. Like I had one of my boys had a friend come over to play, and his mom unabashedly called me up and said, "Do you have any guns in your home? Where are they stored? What about ammunition?" And I was like, "Oh my gosh, I love you." Like I didn't mind her asking that. I was actually so impressed with that. And like, why don't more of us do that? If that's something that we feel strongly about, like, let's start that. Let's start that as a trend.
And that's another topic. And with my husband and I had that discussion. How do we approach some other parent with those questions and not be offensive? And maybe we just need to drop that whole, we don't need to worry about how we're being offensive because we're really just trying to keep our kids safe. So
yeah. And we can all appreciate that. We can all appreciate that.
Well, thank you so much for being on here. I always want to give my guests the last word. So, you know, this is Child Abuse Awareness Month, which I think kind of prompted your op-ed that would have been a good op-ed no matter what. So everyone's going to read it.
Oh, thank you.
But what are some of the last thoughts and words you want to leave with us today?
The last thing that I usually share is about reporting. In the state of Oklahoma, we're all mandated reporters. And I think there's even some misconceptions about reporting. And so I love to just kind of hammer that one home where it's not our jobs. And I mean, as community partners or community members here, it's not our jobs to determine whether or not something that doesn't sit right with us is abuse. That's for the professionals. And so making that call, which can be done anonymously, is just you saying, "I saw something concerning," and that's it. You don't have to do anything from there. And they have a wonderful system at DHS that they go through to figure out whether or not it rises to an incident that needs to be investigated. But I think I would want people to know that making that call, it's our responsibility, of course, it's the law, but it's not meaning that you're calling in and saying this person did something wrong. Like you can absolve yourself from that there. You're standing up for a child. That's all it is.
Very good advice. And thank you for the work you do. I thank everyone at CAN for the work they do, because every single person there, I'm always amazed, because it is just emotionally draining to through what you guys go through. So thank you. And I hope people understand a little bit more about child abuse and neglect and pay attention to what CAN's doing. They do good work.
Well, thank you. Thanks for sharing our mission.